Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 22nd, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Piano Picassos. Von Maur keyboardists have been soothing mall shoppers for 30 years. From Decatur, listeners sometimes fall asleep while pianist Rick Strine plays, but that's okay. I take that as a compliment. That means they are relaxed, and I want it to be a relaxed, enjoyable atmosphere, he said. Then I'll stick a jazz one in there every once in a while to pep it up. Strine is one of the pianists hired to play in the center of the Von Maur department store at Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth. Von Maur has been a fixture at the mall for 30 years. One of the draws for customers and passers-by heading up the middle of the store into the mall is the piano music tickling their ears as they shop. Some make a specific trip to the mall just to hear their favorite piano players. Amy Craddock takes her break from Master Cuts sitting among fans. For her, the stops are a trip down memory lane. My grandma used to come out and we would go shopping here, she said. Craddock, 51, keeps coming back because she knows she will get to hear her favorites, like Frank Sinatra, she said. Frank Clegenge, 80, travels from Lincoln to Decatur for doctor visits, but makes a special trip to hear the piano players. And I dance with her, he said about his favorite pianist, Cindy Lutz, but I just love music. Lutz has gained a following in the 17 years since she was hired. I know what their favorite songs are, Lutz said. You meet a lot of wonderful people, and it is a beautiful atmosphere. Bob Wicker and his wife, Nancy, said they are part of the Cindy Lutz fan club. The couple visits the mall on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays when Lutz is scheduled to play. She plays music from our era, 30s and 40s, Bob Wicker said. Blue Moon and As Time Goes By. As they walk in the door, customers often recognize the pianist by their style. They say, I knew it was you playing, Strine said. We all play the same instrument, even the same music, but we play it a little bit differently. After years of playing, the pianists say they enjoy the performances as much as the audience. It's fun and doesn't seem like work, Strine said. It's not just clocking in and clocking out. It is interacting with people and making them smile. It is the various styles that draws in fans like Tom Hanks. The Decatur resident said he often visited Chicago venues and stores to hear similar music. You can come in when you are tired of shopping, he said. You don't hear that type of music anymore. According to store manager Amy Snow, the piano music creates a good environment. Customers just enjoy and feel relaxed in the shopping experience, she said. It is part of what Von Maur is known for. We are not just a place to shop. The employees enjoy the music as much as the customers. When she knows I'm working and out on the floor, she plays those songs, Snow said of Lutz. Davenport, Iowa-based Von Maur, has pianists in all of its 33 stores in 15 states. The store in Forsyth, which has three pianists, schedules one each day. But we are seeking more, Snow said. It is a flexible position with benefits. Lutz said she finds the job enjoyable. You can adjust to the audience and what they want, she said. It's not as scripted as a concert would be. One of the joys for the pianists is the audience members that join on the spur of the moment. Their favorites are the children who are drawn to the music. The parents will say they have to stop to hear the piano, Lutz said. Some just get up and dance. Each pianist is known for their style of playing. The standard All That Jazz is often heard throughout the store, but with a different sound, depending who is at the keys. Cindy and I both have an arrangement, which are totally different, Strine said. That is kind of fun for us to do different works. Other popular songs include the classic show tunes, Illini Fight Song, Billy Joel, Elton John, or Andrew Lloyd Webber music. I mix a little bit of contemporary Christian music now and then, Strine said. The music has been known to draw out the emotions of some customers, a wistful moment in their lives touched by just the right note in just the right way by a Von Moor pianist. It triggers a memory, but they think it is a good thing, Strine said. They are tears of remembrance rather than tears of sadness. And this article was part of the Together Decatur series. If you know a person or a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983 or at dbeckett@herald-review.com. And continuing on the front page from the Illinois State House, all in on sports betting if Illinois pro teams ready to back gambling if leagues get a cut. Professional sports teams historically have taken an arm's-length approach to gambling, but after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling last year overturned a prohibition on state-sanctioned sports betting, the Cubs, White Sox, Bulls, and Blackhawks are ready to embrace it, if their respective leagues get a piece of the action. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker is counting on $200 million in licensing revenue from sports betting to help fill an estimated $3.2 billion hole for the budget year that begins July 1st. With a lengthy agenda awaiting them when they return to Springfield on April 30th from a two-week break, lawmakers are still wrangling over what legal sports betting would look like in Illinois. All of Chicago's major franchises, with the exception so far of the Bears, are backing a plan pushed by Major League Baseball, the National Basketball Association, and the PGA that would give professional leagues 25 cents of every $100 bet on their sport in the state. Among other arguments, leagues say the fee would be fair compensation for the millions of dollars generated by wagering on their game. But opponents, including the casinos and horse tracks that in early legislative proposals would be shelling out upward of $10 million for each sportsbook license, say the leagues should be left to negotiate with sportsbook operators if they want a cut. Which side prevails could come down to who has more sway in Springfield, the leagues and team owners, or the gambling interests. Both sides have written plenty of campaign checks, but the casinos and horse tracks are a more consistent presence at the Capitol, as their fortunes rise and fall based on the actions of lawmakers. If Illinois cuts the leagues in, it would be the first state to do so. None of the six states that have recently legalized gambling provide a dime to sports leagues, nor does longtime gambling haven Nevada. That remains a really big issue of contention among all of us who are working on this, said State Representative Mike Zalewski, a Riverside Democrat who's leading the negotiations in the House. It's quite frankly an audacious task. Zalewski acknowledged, however, that the teams and leagues are intrinsically involved in what's going to be a brand new industry. In addition to the fee on every wager placed, the leagues want to have a say in what types of bets are allowed. They're asking that sportsbooks be required to use official league data, particularly to settle in-play bets, those placed during a contest on things like whether Cubs infielder Anthony Rizzo will strike out in his next at-bat. The leagues also want access to betting data from gambling operators to help spot suspicious patterns across state lines. These measures and others would help protect the sports and the consumers who bet on them, the leagues and teams say. Sports betting has been occurring on a massive scale for decades in an illegal market. None of this money benefits the state, and there are zero protections for consumers. The Blackhawks, Bulls, Cubs, and White Sox wrote last month in a joint letter to Zalewski. To maximize revenue and protect consumers, the team said, Illinois needs a sports betting framework that includes a partnership between the state and its professional sports teams and their leagues. The NFL and the Bears, meanwhile, have been relatively silent on the issue in Illinois. The NFL is officially neutral on the proposal from the other pro leagues, and representatives did not respond to requests for comment. In response to a question about the team's position, Bears spokesman Brandon Faber said only, "The league and the Bears are monitoring the discussion in Springfield." Professional leagues and franchises have been making the argument for a share of the sports betting cash in state houses across the country, so far unsuccessfully, as legislatures look to cash in on a new revenue stream for their states. It's a bit challenging to legislatively mandate a fee that goes to a third-party commercial interest, said Jennifer Roberts, Associate Director of the International Center for Gaming Regulation at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas. Nevada has had a long history of legal, regulated sports betting without that fee. It's especially difficult to make the case given the volatility of sports betting revenue, Roberts said. So far, legal sports betting is proving to be less lucrative than many states anticipated. The Associated Press reported earlier this month that tax revenues have not lived up to projections in 4 of the 6 states that recently legalized sports betting. Rhode Island, for example, expected to bring in $1 million per month from a 51% tax on sports betting proceeds, but brought in only about $50,000 monthly from late November through February, according to an AP analysis. Generally, states make their money by taxing the sportsbook's post-payout revenue. Giving the leagues a cut off the top would reduce the amount left over for taxes. It's a tough pill to swallow for a lot of states, Roberts said. The leagues argue that giving them an off-the-top percentage creates an incentive for them to promote legal sports betting, increasing interest and generating more money for everyone involved. "That means that our only incentive is to grow the business," Dan Spillane, a senior vice president with the NBA, said during a meeting with the Tribune last week. "The more bets there are, then the more money we make, but we're completely agnostic as to outcome of any particular bet. And that's because we didn't want to be in the position where we would make more money if our fans lose bets." Casinos and other gambling operators believe the leagues stand to benefit financially from legalized sports betting through increased fan interest and viewership, regardless of whether lawmakers give them a direct cut. "No other state has mandated a fee, and we believe Illinois should not be the first state to do so," Corey Wise, general manager of Rivers Casino in Des Plaines, said in a statement. Lawmakers are being lobbied heavily by groups on both sides of the issue that have a history of flexing their political muscle. The 4 families that own Chicago's 5 major sports teams have invested a ton of both financial and political capital in this state and in the city of Chicago specifically, Zalewski said. "And if you just tell them simply, we're not going to engage, we're not going to negotiate, they're likely to oppose the bill, and that would be problematic." "You don't get to be a sports owner without some political moxie, so we're trying to avoid opposition here." And continuing on the front page, financial crisis for nursing homes. Medicaid reimbursement, patient-staff ratio, both woefully low. Since March 2014, 20 state-licensed skilled care nursing homes, including 2 in Decatur, have closed for financial reasons, while many of those continuing to serve the state's neediest elderly populations face staffing shortages and operating deficits caused by diminishing state government investment. Nursing home advocates warn that the industry is already in crisis, and a continuance of this trend could mean an unavailability of care for Illinois' aging population within a decade. These facilities are closing, and I can tell you more are going to close, said Pat Comstock, executive director of the Healthcare Council of Illinois, a nursing home advocacy group. It's happening because we have a situation in Illinois where they can no longer financially survive. The pace of closures has quickened in recent years, with 5 skilled care nursing facilities, those that house the sickest and most vulnerable, closing from 2014 to 2016, 6 closing in each of 2017 and 2018, and 3 already shutting their doors in 2019, according to the Illinois Department of Public Health. The 2017 closure list includes Lincoln Manor, a 140-bed nursing home at 2650 North Monroe Street. The move meant that about 85 employees weren't paid, touching off a back and forth that eventually included lawyers. The Decatur Living Center at 444 West Harrison Avenue also closed in February. Both facilities cited financial reasons for closing. To fully quantify the issues facing the industry and their possible solutions, HCCI commissioned a study conducted by the business advisory firm Plant Moran, the Claude Pepper Center of Florida State University, and managed care Medicaid expert Meredith Duncan. The 85-page report states Illinois' Medicaid ranks 49th in the nation for Medicaid reimbursement rates, and nursing homes lose approximately $15,000 per year, or an average of $41 per day, for each Medicaid-funded patient. Those shortages create a $649 million single-year funding shortfall across the industry in Illinois. While the story of the state's disinvestment in nursing homes is largely a financial one, Comstock said facility closures take a human toll, affecting communities across the state. One of the really sad things about this is that when you close facilities, you create access problems for the elderly, and you create additional challenges for families, she said. And also, we know that when the elderly who are very sick, if they get displaced or move to another location, it's really difficult on them, and some of them just don't survive that displacement. The senior advocacy group, AARP, detailed in its own report earlier this year that Illinois nursing homes have the worst patient-to-staff ratio in the nation, leading to the second-worst rate for administering antipsychotic drugs to sedate patients without a psychiatric diagnosis. Inadequate staffing at many Illinois nursing homes leaves residents neglected, malnourished, suffering from bed sores, or worse, said Ryan Grunenfelter, Director of Advocacy and Outreach for AARP. The poor staffing ratio persists despite state mandates on minimum hours of care per patient at state-licensed nursing facilities. Senate Bill 1510, which passed the Senate by a 39-19 vote on April 10th, would require informed consent if an antipsychotic drug is to be administered, and would establish fines for nursing homes which fail to meet mandated staffing levels. But the HCCI said the legislation fails to address the root cause of staffing shortages. Medicaid rates have failed to keep pace with the actual cost of care in Illinois, said HCCI Vice President Amanda Ginther, adding that a statewide worker shortage also makes it difficult to fill staffing positions. The state provides 27% of funding for the approximately 740 intermediate and skilled care homes it licenses. The facilities themselves provide 23% of their funding through a pair of taxes on beds, which legally cannot be passed on to residents. The federal government provides the other half of funding by matching state and provider contributions. But the state's share of the funding is shrinking because Illinois' structural reimbursement rate remains stagnant each year, as it is based on years-old market costs for nursing, 2014, support, 2004, and capital, 1999, expenses. As a result, Illinois also has the lowest average total direct hours per patient day at 3.4169 hours. Providers in the state cannot afford to provide the staffing levels that providers like those in Michigan can afford, the report said. Like all state-funded entities, nursing homes were adversely affected by a multi-year budget impasse, which included a temporary funding cut executed by former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner's administration in 2015. We never really recovered from that, Comstock said. Historically, the losses incurred by caring for Medicaid-dependent patients have been at least partially offset by private payers living at the same facility. But the number of those patients living at nursing homes is shrinking. Nursing homes are no longer like the old-age homes that one would think of. They're no longer grandma in the corner knitting and grandpa playing pinochle with his buddies, Ginther said. They're incredibly sick, fragile people that require medically complex care around the clock. According to the HCCI report, the financial strains of Illinois' poor Medicaid funding rates are compounded by bureaucratic reimbursement delays. It is not uncommon, the report said, to find high Medicaid facilities with 40% or more residents in pending status due to delays in the state's processing of long-term benefits applications. During this period, the care provider must cover all costs. We're in situations where we've been providing care for years without any compensation, Comstock said, adding that legislation recently passed to expedite application processing has not yet yielded satisfactory results. Reimbursement delays have also become more prevalent since the state adopted a privatized Medicaid managed care system in 2011, the report said. That system uses private insurance companies known as managed care organizations, or MCOs, to coordinate each patient's care. The state releases funds to MCOs at a statute-specified daily rate, and they pass it on to nursing homes that apply for reimbursement for the Medicaid-covered care they provide. According to a report from Meredith Duncan, one of the state's leading legal experts on managed care, provider claims are often denied or delayed without explanation, and MCOs often refuse to pay state-mandated late payments. Often, Duncan said, the provider's only recourse is a time-consuming legal process that often costs more than the amount recovered. Because of that, many providers have been forced to triple the size of their billing departments and hire lawyers, consultants, and lobbyists, further diverting resources that would be better directed at filling patient care staffing shortages. For more information online, you can visit herald-review.com to see the list of Illinois nursing home closures since 2014. And now moving to the local and state page, cannabis dispensary ownership changes. Boston-based medical company buys Springfield site. Amid Governor J.B. Pritzker's push to legalize marijuana for recreational use in Illinois, one of Springfield's two medical cannabis dispensaries has been purchased by a Boston-based cannabis company. HCI Alternatives, which has locations in Springfield and Collinsville, is being bought by Ascend Wellness, a vertically integrated cannabis company that currently operates in Massachusetts, Michigan, and Ohio. The purchase price was not disclosed. The Boston-based company also has entered into a long-term lease agreement to operate a 75,000-square-foot cultivation facility in Barrie, which is about 80 miles west of Springfield. HCI and the Barrie Cultivation Facility will operate under the banner of Ascend Illinois. Chris Stone, the founder and CEO of HCI, will assume the same role in the new company. He said the deal is still pending approval from state regulators, but expects a decision soon. Stone said the transaction would be mutually beneficial, with Ascend gaining access to a new statewide medical cannabis market, of which HCI reportedly has a 10% market share, and HCI benefiting from expertise of its new parent company. Ascend Wellness did not respond to a request for comment, but company founder Abner Curtin said in a December press release that Ascend is excited to bring a wide variety of branded product to enhance the experience of the Illinois consumer. HCI was founded in 2016, 3 years after state lawmakers voted to authorize a pilot program for medical marijuana. Since the program was launched in 2015, more than 61,000 patients have been approved to purchase cannabis from one of the state's 55 licensed dispensaries. In 2018, retail sales totaled more than $136 million. Last month alone, more than 40,000 unique patients purchased nearly $17.7 million in medical cannabis products. 2019 retail sales through March already total more than $44 million. With the medical pot market budding, Stone said that the Ascend Illinois is working on expansion plans across the state, with possibilities in Chicago and the suburbs, in addition to more downstate locations. And, should marijuana be legalized for recreational use, Stone said the acquisition better prepares us for the possibility of an adult use program in the future. And Tony Reed writes from Decatur, "Vandals strike vehicles. Police are investigating after two Decatur vehicles were damaged by vandalism in 2 days. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland with Decatur Police said the incidents are not connected, but in each case, the intention appears to have been to cause destruction rather than steal from the vehicles involved. The first attack came sometime between 9:30 p.m. Thursday and 7:40 a.m. Friday and involved a 2007 Ford Mustang. The car was parked in the 1700 block of North College Street, and the 76-year-old woman owner awoke to find a hole smashed through the front driver's side door window and a dent nearby the door. Copeland said a piece of concrete that did the damage was lying on the front passenger seat. The vehicle's rear windshield showed three impact areas consistent, Copeland said, with being shot with a BB gun. The owner has no idea why anyone would do this, Copeland added. There was some money sitting in between the front seats, and the money was still there. So it looks like whoever damaged it just damaged it to damage it. In the second incident, which happened between 7 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. Friday, a 2007 Dodge Caliber had three tires slashed while it was parked in the 2500 block of North Monroe Street. Copeland said the 29-year-old female owner was working nearby and realized there was something wrong when she tried to drive out of a parking lot. Two of the tires had visible slits in the sidewalls, and on the other, the officer could not locate the slit or slash in the tire, added Copeland. He said the owner told police she had only just replaced two of the tires a few weeks ago at a cost of more than $200. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, April 22nd, 2019. Please stay tuned.